netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Well, hey, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. We're sitting in the Sidewalk Cafe here in Amsterdam. Mike Seymour, Jeff Huser also. How's it going, guys?
Good. We're either sitting in a Sidewalk Cafe about to have a drink, or we have some of the best ADR and sound people producing a digital soundscape. You decide.
It's true.
Exactly. Well, it's been great hanging out with you guys here at IBC. Mike's been in London working. Jeff and I flew over from the States. Why don't we dive into stuff we saw at the show that's interesting? Well, actually, you know what? Why don't we start by talking about the meetup last night? Because, once again, that was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it really was. And I've got to say, John, I was unaware of how large the apartment had grown to in that you hire each year for IBC. So we actually had quite a lot of space, and that was good because we had quite a lot of people that turned up.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. I've always been impressed here in Europe with the turnout that we have. I think us slackers in North America need to get our acts together a bit.
It's a bit harsh. We've had some pretty good NAB meetups.
Yeah, but it really has been fantastic here. We had a lot of people show up from PhD, FX Guide, manufacturers, and so forth. And frankly, it's just great to get together and hear what they have to say about FX PhD, which is the main reason we do it, in addition to this drinking beer.
Well, drinking beer is a good thing. I don't have any problem with drinking beer. So would you say there was anything that you kind of like picked out other than the social aspect that was a theme of that you were hearing last night? Like, you know, I mean, I heard a couple of things that people were saying. One is that they really, really responding. I mean, I've heard this a million times, but again, really, really responding to the forums that just generally speaking, people just love kind of. And then so going to the event is kind of an extension of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's where a lot of the people actually who came in together as a group met each other. In fact, even the people I'm staying with, you know, met in the forums and online FX machine and become friends over the years. But not just friends, but actually business relationships as well. People kind of partnering and doing jobs remotely and relying on each other to do bits of the work. I think that's a great aspect of the meetup and the forums.
Yeah, we had people in from all over Europe. So obviously there are some Americans and Australians in the room. But leaving us aside, there were like people in from Sweden and
Denmark,
yeah.
Norway, Spain, our friends from Spain.
Germany.
We actually in the early days.
The English that had crossed the channel.
Yeah, so a really great mix. And anyone, thanks for turning up and coming out and saying hi. And frankly, even thanks to anyone who didn't make it to the meetup that still kind of stops us and says hi. We really do appreciate meeting you. I mean, a couple people go, I don't know if I want to bother you or not or whatever, but it's not a bother at all. I really like hearing from our members and what they have to say, good and bad.
Right. You know, it's that sort of collective thing. Hey, can I just say this white beer? Mm-hmm. It's whatever. What is it? It's
wit,
good.
Wit
beer.
Well, they call
beer.
Wit in.
I'm having this again.
Yeah,
this is good.
I figured you'd like that.
So let's go to the show because I want to discuss some of the technology that
exactly.
We saw. Let's start at the big end, like the big things at the show. I think a lot of it was people had said they were going to release stuff, and then we were now seeing stuff being released. It was like stuff coming from the going to be to actually being.
Yeah, I think the big one for me actually was Storm. Actually caught wind, you know, actually saw some of the beginnings of Storm a while ago, in addition to the time I was in London around the time of the Foundry Masterclass, I guess it was, earlier this year.
Well, it was at NAB, right, as well?
NAB, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, just the speed of development between those 3 points in time are incredible. I think the software has matured incredibly, and they've added some really nice features in it. The kind of things that you want when you're working, you know, worrying about metadata, worrying about tagging, things like that, things at the ingest stage that can actually lead you to have easier production and post-production dealing with RED files.
Yeah, and just by way of cross-promotion, I did an interview with the guys at both the Foundry and actually at RED, and that is in our RED Center podcast at FX Guide. So if you wanted to have a hear a bit more in-depth on that, and we'll probably get a bit more of that coming up on FX Guide TV.
Yeah, it'll be the second episode of FX Guide TV. We'll have actually the Storm demo as well as an uncut version on our YouTube channel.
And speaking of FX Guide TV, Jeff, what did you think of the Autodesk discussion or announcements, the products and the extensions and the...
Yeah, I really like where Flame's been going over the last few years. Obviously, the every show they do their upgrades and their releases, but this one I just they're really taking a look at problem solving. The 2011 releases have just been great for me. I've been doing a lot of work on those lately, and they've been great. So just seeing them go in that direction. There's obviously some things I'd still like to see them do, and I know they're working on. So it just keeps steadily, you know, Flame.
Well, let's be specific. Like, you're one of the big studios. We're not going to get into what you're doing, but what specifically do you want to see in?
Well, my big thing with Flame is always now making it work with the rest of the team, making it work with the rest of the tools.
The pipeline?
The pipeline.
Right.
And in most modern facilities now, that means playing nicely with CG and Nuke and, you know, be able to work on a level playing field with EXRs is my next goal for what I want to see in Flame. And I've, you know, every time I see an announcement for the last few years, I've been kind of like, oh, maybe not, you know, but it keeps getting better and better. And at least now you can import stuff and work with stuff using the gateway, which I love. And, but, you know, the next step is obvious and I'm sure they'll get there.
What about, John, the whole thing about dumping the products together, or rather collecting the products together?
Well, a couple things on that front. First of all, just as the owner of the Flame system, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, just simply because I think from a business standpoint, it adds value to the system. For Jim Anarino, the smoke editor, what he gets is all the Flame action tool set inside smoke. Because remember, even in Smoke Advance, you're getting everything like projectors and things like that inside of, or substance, for instance, inside of action. So for him, that's going to be great. Also, it's kind of a, you know, also if I need to sell it or get rid of it, it actually has more value by this way, because I can certainly see, I think that this is going to be probably a common approach of how they're going to market and sell Flame.
So if somebody hasn't actually caught up with the details, I guess we should just back up and say what that is.
Yeah, the deal is, if you own, they have introduced this thing, again, this is for the first FX Guide TV from IBC episode 91, correct? I believe it is. Yeah, so basically for, if you own a Flame for $10,000, you get Flame, Luster, and Smoke Advanced with all the Flame action tools for $10,000 more, running on the same system, okay? Sharing the same media, sharing the same frame store.
So you're going to upgrade your system.
Yeah.
I guess the thing for me is, I mean, the Smoke Flame thing is kind of, maybe you'd say it's a no-brainer, Jeff, but what about Luster, though? What do we think about that? Like, we were having this discussion before over dinner, I think, last night or whatever. You were saying the Luster UI is not exactly... I mean, you know, Smoke is the UI of Flame with a couple of changes.
Yep.
That's not really true of Luster.
No, it's not, but I think it's a good move, because everyone I'm talking to, including the guys I'm working with right now, and what we saw in the FX Guy TV app has been echoed by almost everyone I've talked to who's working on TV commercials, actually, is that they're being forced to do more in the room.
Sure.
And grading is one aspect of that. I don't think that to the UI standpoint, I think... moving forward, they need to unify things and make it feel like it's the same app. But I think that was a smart move to kind of bundle it that way. Just as far as term, give facilities flexibility in what they're doing.
Sure. Well, I think it dovetails beautifully with what's happening in the real marketplace, which is the less and less film that's being shot. So we're being oftentimes asked to do more color correction, because we're getting the raw files from the red cameras and from, you know, whatever.
Right, because they're not coming to you from a transfer color kind of stuff.
Right, okay, and I think that's going to be an interesting dilemma for the industry in terms of that workflow, because, I mean, when you think about the telecine workflow that we all know and love, that only exists because that's the only way we could deal with film in the days of... I mean, the whole workflow was invented because technology required that you take the film down to a small piece of tape and pass it on to the next person, because that technology couldn't handle the film at that from there forward. Now we're able to keep the full 4K file all the way through the post process. Color correction can be anywhere in the process now, and preferably not anywhere in the process, but throughout.
Not lose all the metadata that you have as part of your edit, too. And even if it's not the smoke or the Flame guy doing the grading, you have the flexibility to bring someone in, too, as well. And I know there's a potential for that happening where I am.
Because that's the thing.
I don't think it's necessarily the same.
No,
skill
I agree.
Set.
It's that old.
Yeah, there's a skill set, but
in one box. And
but also, it's not even just that. It's just I don't want to grade on a tablet.
True.
Because,
true.
Let's just say that the Euphonics console is being supported on the Mac platform for Smoke on Mac. I wouldn't see it far in the day that you have lower cost panels being supported on the Linux workstations. So that you could throw a fairly inexpensive grading panel on top of that to use. But you're certainly right. Grading with, you ask any colorist in the world, and frankly anyone, any artist who's seen the light and had the opportunity to grade with a trackball surface, you get it immediately.
Even watching him do the Storm demo with the trackballs was pretty impressive.
Which I guess dovetails into DaVinci, because as we were alluding to earlier, that's now moved from, you know, talking about to actually starting to release.
A little bit of cause and effect there maybe with Luster, I would say.
You think,
And others.
Just reducing the price.
All markets kind of.
Well, Colorista too, and that's got secondaries. Storm has got secondaries. Now, the secondaries are a bit limited in Storm.
Yeah, yeah.
At this stage.
Right, at this stage. But, you know, I think the Da Vinci move, we'll see how it plays out. It's amazing that they're going to have the same... Well, they'd like to say in the market that it's the exact same tool set that you have on the Mac platform to grade and resolve versus the Linux one, but it's not quite the same as it might, because I think you have run into.
It's not quite the same. This beer is really good.
It's delicious.
You know, you don't have a number of card slots you can do, so for instance, you can't get the same kind of Red Rocket R3D stereo grading is a good example, or faster speed. So there are some hardware differences that obviously lead to a difference in price point.
Just while we're on that, on one thing on Storm, which we kind of covered a little, but I really like the Storm on-set solution, and I don't think we sort of hit on that super, but because it takes the Red Rocket card, and that's the first outside of Red product that has HD SDI output from the Red Rocket card, you could put a Storm on a laptop. I guess you could do this with DaVinci, but you wouldn't get the output. And then put a Red Rocket card underneath it, which normally I would be like, well, what's the point in that? Because if you're trying to transfer, the bottleneck becomes the uncompressed files to the RAID. But with the HD SDI, you could then put a projector on set, so you could actually play back rushes or just a scene in real time.
A really great playback.
Yeah.
A really great playback.
Wait, you could do that with a laptop set. With the Rocket card?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to put the Red Rocket module thingy underneath, which looks like another laptop screwed underneath. But the point is, that is pretty portable, or obviously a tower. But once you put the HD SDI on there, you've got somewhere to put the data that you don't need to record the data, so bandwidth is no longer an issue. So you can pump out of there sort of fairly high res to a projector, whereas if you're pumping out 4K, you have to put that somewhere on a drive. You can't do that on a... I mean, it's what? You drop from 32 frames a second to, like, about, what, 4 going to a local drive?
And even if you don't have the Red Rocket card, man, what, $300? Well, I'm sorry.
Was
the price point again? I'm sorry. Just.
Oh, so it's 200 and... So I think it's £275.
Which is
250 pounds, $375 US for Storm. But that was another reason why I think it's really good for on-set stuff.
Yeah,
because,
sure.
Like, why wouldn't you? Right?
Absolutely,
right.
You wouldn't think twice.
So you read a really quite snarky but funny Twitter this morning.
Somebody on Twitter said that it's it looks like Red Cine X redone by grown-ups, which I think is a little unfair. I think Red Cine X is actually quite a great product, but I will say, when you do sit down in front of Storm and watch a demo, you go, oh, wow, yeah.
Well, but also, I wouldn't say push them, but maybe sure. Push them, but shove them a little. I mean, Red today has released a version that will cut down R3D files, which, of course, is what Storm did that certainly got my attention in AB. Because, oh, my God, the number of times we'll shoot 2 gig and I want 8 frames and
you
have to transfer them.
To me or John.
Yeah.
And you can't either have to send the whole R3D.
The whole R3D, and it's really a pain.
Yeah, R3D selects would be wonderful.
And I think wasn't it Jim in the forums today on Red User who made the comment that he can't wait to see what the combination of the Foundry Boys and Graham come up with together, working together on stuff.
Yeah,
because Graham is like such a good guy. And
the combination is pretty, it's exciting to see stuff start to head in those directions where getting more collaboration with them.
So, okay, so anything else in the big boxes? Have I seen anything Adobe-ish here? I haven't seen, this is not really their show, is it?
A new version of Flash Media Server, which I skipped the press event on.
I'm sorry, I think I dozed off there. Were you saying something?
Yes, exactly. It is actually still being used. I'm actually not a huge fan of the Flash bashing thing, because there are actually certain things that it can do that nothing else can do at the time. I'm not a fan of the Flash websites per se, but like streaming, for knowing exactly what people are watching, you don't really know if people are watching.
I've heard a certain amount of swearing in the suite when people are trying to book restaurants on their iPads and hit Flash pages.
Yeah, but that's not because it's because I can't actually view it on the iPad. It's not because of I don't have that. I just don't think it's inherently bad. They just need to get their act together and make it more cross-intent. But again, that's kind of outside our subject range, what we're following. But I did have to spend some good time with the folks. There's several folks from Seattle on the After Effects team in town, and has a good time meeting with them. And they're really excited about where things are going, especially considering all the interaction between
the booth was
Pro
busy
and
every time I walked
After
by.
Effects. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not really a launch place for them, is it? I mean, I agree with you totally. I think Adobe's really going gangbusters. I mean, Adobe never really dipped, but Adobe and Avid are really just solid companies.
Who just announced that? Some network just announced they switched to Premiere Pro. Don't be any Final Cut.
They announced that they were going to add 2,000 seats.
Was it
2,000 seats at the BBC?
It was. I thought that was a pretty good. I would hope that puts some pressure on Apple to kind of join the world of telling people what's going on and
That's not going to happen.
I know, but, you know, it's a frustration factor, I'm sure.
And some kudos also to Abbott as well. I still think they're making really solid strides in what
yeah,
they're
me too.
Doing.
Absolutely.
They've done some interesting interviews, some new workflow stuff, some less expensive kind of media server solutions in the ISIS.
MC5 is just
yeah,
a little buggy but when it first came out, but it's good.
DS is now software only for $9,000, which includes Media Composer. I'll be honest, I'm not familiar enough with the development of DS to know kind of what's been happening. And maybe our friend Victor, who used it quite a bit in the past, would know more. But again, I just like the moves that they're making. And really, we had the discussion about DaVinci lowering the price and the danger of not having sustainable professional support and professional software. And Avid just seems like they are focused on the professional market, broadcast, commercial post. Feature film, they're not that interested since the reorg a couple years ago in going after the consumer market. So I think that's actually really solid. You know, I'm happy to see them do well.
I had a conversation with somebody the other night who said that they said, look, if I'm doing stuff on my laptop for myself, I'm going to use Final Cut Pro. If I'm trying to make a living, I'm going to buy an Avid.
Yeah.
And I went, I mean, we run a lot of company on Final Cut Pro, so. And I can't really, I mean...
Exactly.
But yeah. On the other hand,
on Final Cut Pro, lot.
Yes.
And people do both, and all three, frankly.
Yeah.
So it's nice. What I like, you know what? Competition's good. Keep the fire under everybody.
Yeah. I would go to Avid before I'd go to Premiere myself.
Yes.
But I still, maybe that's just, they walked away, they came back on Mac and stuff, and I... But
yeah, I agree.
That and Avid just seem solid.
Yeah, and frankly, the Avid solidness is also based in a collaborative workflow at a facility.
Right.
A lot of the stuff I'm doing is sometimes on my own. We're not sharing media between projects, and that's where the guys at Hootenanny, for instance, really love Avid.
Even Final Cut Server just sucks.
So, really like that. Well, what else outside the production? We actually had, okay, I'm going to show Jeff a photo here, and we'll post it if I can find it.
While you're talking... So there's something that we'll get onto cameras in a second because I'm really keen to talk about those. But we were over at the Dolby booth, and now you may not know this, Jeff, but your business partner John Montgomery is a bit of a fan of the film Tron,
The Light Cycle.
That's right.
We were actually told by Jim about this Filmbot in the FXBHC forums or at Filmbot and on Twitter. Kind of clued us in on this. He just actually arrived today and went straight from the airport to IBC. But yes, it was quite cool.
Quite cool. It was awesome.
Light cycle. Physical
light cycle.
Now, is it just a prototype thing? Or?
I did drop to my knees in front of it.
He actually did.
7 minutes.
He just beat me to it. I just did it in my mind.
No, but seriously, it was there was a security guard there, so it was, you know, but it was a full-on light cycle. Like, it was not...
It's beautiful.
And you know what? It even had a working display on the front of the, you know, where the, like you'd normally have a Speedo kind of thing on a motorbike.
Bike?
Well, I didn't take it for a run around.
Right? It's just
from the film.
Well, yeah.
But it's not like you would jump on it and
you're not gonna see it go down here. A
couple of rides around IBC, you know, jump a canal.
But then the next thing that I saw running around the floor was this.
Which I've got to say,
is that a Segway
with
yes,
it's a Segway with like.
Whoa.
Knobby wheels and
yeah, like off,
and
it's the all-terrain, like, looks like a heavy-duty one.
Yeah.
It's got a crane on the top.
Yeah.
It's got like a Jimmy jib on top of it.
Mike has a Segway fetish, one could say.
Oh, my Lord.
But this is just like with a gyro head and a...
I teed up. It is Segway porn for Mike. I honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that I can't afford it, I would be buying one of those things just to... I mean, oh my God.
You know, the problem with a Segway is it's like a jet ski. You can't buy one. Because what fun is it to ride around on one jet ski?
No, you said that. You can use it for filming. You can ride around on one.
You can deliver the mail.
You're just using it as an excuse to buy one.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
See, if you buy two, then your wife will be happier about the concept.
No, I don't think you've met my wife, Jeff. I don't think spending that much money twice is going to make her happy. No, that would
be
a concept.
Free in every garage, I thought of them.
Yeah. Hey, so let's talk about cameras. So I had a lot of fun over at the Arri Alexa booth today. They had dancers and ballerinas and stuff going on.
So what is the plus?
Okay, so the plus is a couple of things. So let's start with the price. An Arri Alexa that you would have bought last week would be €50,000. This would be 59, about 9,000 more. For that, they take off the side module. If you're facing the front of the camera on the right or the east side, if you like, replace that module. Now, that module then has a built-in Wi-Fi, and it actually works as a Wi-Fi base station. So, for example, unlike what would happen with a Canon 5D, where it would go onto the Wi-Fi network and then allow you to communicate to other Wi-Fi devices, it's its own base station. So on your iPhone or your iPad, you go to a Wi-Fi network and you actually see the camera.
Oh.
And you connect to the camera, not so it's a closed loop, right?
Because, does it stream video that way?
Well, no, because it's not designed to stream video. What it's designed to be is a camera controller. So as you adjust things on the camera or adjust it on the thing, it's going to instantly update the other one.
But you don't get an image.
No, you don't get an image. No, it's not designed for that because they couldn't stream it down fast enough. Now, it does now have two, as part of this, two outputs for video at the back, 1920 by 1080 full output. So one of those could actually go to a wireless box and feed out for a wireless feed. So you could do that quite separately. But no, that's not the purpose of it. And it's a controller. So if you've got it up on top of a crane, you could be adjusting all the settings on the camera. If you've got it in a remote location on top of a car, whatever. In addition to that, it's got now three controllers coming out of it for things like follow focus, zoom, and aperture control, which are just the full motorized connections from Ari.
Another round? She's here.
Another round? I'm still going, but that's because I'm drinking too much. But you guys...
Yeah,
sure.
I'm good. Yeah.
Sure, thank you.
Just need to ask.
Same?
Sure.
The other thing about it is that it now supports camera data from the lensing. Now, this isn't the same as the iTech data that you'd get from a Cook, but it is, in fact, taking the camera data and feeding that into the MetaStream that would go up to, say, an onboard recorder. And nearly everybody I saw had onboard recorders from Codex, which come in 10, 20, and 40 minutes as standard. That when they're running in RAW mode, that's about 10% more, so you'd be like 12 minutes... 22 minutes, 40, 24 minutes, and 44 minutes. And that's recording the effectively 3K ARRI RAW format in linear straight off the camera. So you would then take that, pop off that module, take it over to a base station at a Mac tower, and then transfer that through Codex,
but
and then use,
like... getting more people doing metadata now, it sounds like. Is that, that's what this all means, more so? I mean, the ARRI...
Well, that's two big things there, right? One is the metadata, and one is the Codex, just for recording RAW. Because up until now, you know, people have been sort of focused a bit, I think, on the ProRes recording.
And
so ARRI pushes that there are four workflows, and we'll obviously be covering these in PhD. One is that you just shoot ProRes. Thanks for playing. Walk away. Second one is you shoot HD, and you take one of those HD taps and feed it into a tape. You just record tape. You got HD tape. Thanks for playing. The next one is you record HD, but to something like a Codex box, so that you now have HD but fully tapeless workflow. And then the fourth is I would record HD-ish images, but actually at this 3K RAW format in RAW to the recorder. So it's higher res than HD, bigger bit depth, and it's RAW. It's pre-upstream of any color space conversion. Now, you can, in fact, combo those. So I could simultaneously record ProRes on the side while recording RAW up to the camera module if I wanted to.
But 3K?
Well, it's 2,800 by whatever it is. It's not 1920 by 1080.
You get a lot of the RAW stuff from them, and it's nice the manufacturers starting to support that. In fact, the new version of Autodesk, actually, we learned today the first to actually support the version 3, but the extension release contains ARRI support, much like in a similar
Phantom
way
too, right?
to the...
Sorry?
Was it do Phantom files too? I thought I heard that too.
You said that yesterday.
Because I think that's exciting, because we are getting thrown all sorts of footage like that all the time. I mean, the RED support's been great. And if not, I think I've heard that.
I'm having second doubts about that.
Oh, yeah?
But yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, if you're about to buy a flame based on
John's recommendation, please do not.
Well, you said that yesterday, and I was excited about it.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I did too. I kind of went, oh, really?
Wow, really? We're going to buy three or four new flames each. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So the other thing that, you know, part of that, I think, is just how much Codex has come along, the Codex boxes and stuff. We used them on I Love Sarah Jane for FX PhD, but that was Viper's with the Venom packs, and the Venom packs sucked. So replacing those with sort of Codex boxes would be pretty cool. Not that anyone's using Vipers anymore, but you know.
Generation since then, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not generation on the camera or the...
Of the recorders.
The Codex, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're much smaller. Right. But that wasn't the problem of the Codex box. It was a problem of the Venom pack just outputting only 1920 by 1080 through an HDMI cable. So I had to, like, take the Venom pack and then effectively dub it like videotape, which was not really tapeless workflow, it was sort of just dick workflow.
It's kind of a mistake not to, when you're shooting, not to deal with getting their area raw files off, I think. You know, it's just, I get where it is, but it's like, might as well try and go for it, I think, and especially the type of work we're doing, commercials, it just seems clients expect that kind of latitude.
Red wasn't here with a stand. Do you think it matters these days if a company doesn't come and have a stand?
I'd like to talk to somebody from Europe about that, because, I mean, obviously we see them fairly frequently.
Sorry?
I'd like to talk to somebody from Europe about that, because, frankly, we see them at NAB. We see them, they do a big thing there. They have Red Days, and I know they have the one in London, though, too, right? So they have opportunities. I mean,
philosophically, my thing about the trade shows is actually meeting face-to-face with someone. I think as a customer, an artist, a DOP or whatever, there's an extreme high amount of value of getting to speak to people face-to-face. Not so much going in this huge show floor stuff with all the people, but I really loved when I was working on The Flame to be able to come and talk to developers at AMB. It meant a great deal to me to actually have that kind of one-on-one contact, which I think is worth at least having some kind of presence here in some way.
Ted's been pretty much everywhere, though. He's been on every booth and, you know, doing things at the Foundry booth and the, it was at Avid, I believe.
I don't think the Red has enough problem, however, getting the word out as to what they're doing at all. No, they, you know what I mean? I don't think from that standpoint, that's one of the things they need to be here to show. But I do think there's something very useful about meeting face-to-face.
Okay, well, what about, if we change gears, what about the small stuff that you maybe wouldn't, you know, be able to just obviously go to on the, I mean, obviously on the net you can go to Red User or you can go to Ari's site. And what about
small companies like the, yeah, we were looking for today and finding those hidden gems, I like to call them.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to doing that. Yeah, I think that's one of the great things that we did. Just even touching a product that maybe you've even seen in a catalog, the B&H photo catalog, for instance, and going up and playing with it, is, you're right, it's really useful.
We've seen a few of those, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
We like the little LED lights we were looking at, the focusable spot Fresnel type LED light with quite a nice output.
Yeah, light panels, about 675 watt comparable output, I think, from it. Focusable, which was big.
I love LED lights, but there were too many of them on the floor.
But this one is a spotlight.
Yes. Yeah, this is very
LED spotlight. That's a big difference over the panels.
Schlachter had one too. Schlatter, how do you say that? The tripod people, they had one too.
No comment. Bless them, our German friends or whatever. Yeah, but
they had that cool tripod, but they also, when I was looking up on the web, I found that they had another LED light like that. Very similar.
And I also appreciated being able to go by the Marshall booth and actually see their line of monitors, because frankly I find their monitor line a bit confusing into what stands one over the other. And we looked at their most recent display, which actually...
Schachtler.
Schachtler.
I want to put more letters in it than there are.
I was just trying to work out what on earth you were talking about there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cool, they had this SOOM Zoom tripod.
Yeah.
And they had this, they had their own version of that LED light too.
Describe the tripod though.
Oh my God. SOOM is the name of the tripod, and Mike's been, you've been shooting with it, so I should have you do it. But I mean, I was just blown away because I walked up and this tripod was, the center column was extended.
I did get a bit enthusiastic.
You were dancing around. Yeah.
I was like, people actually were coming around thinking.
You were doing the demo, yeah. But well, yeah, I have some stills. We'll throw those up too. Yeah, I want to come back to the Marshall stuff. You getting the brochure there? Yeah, okay.
I'll talk to you about that.
But the tripod, though, the tripod was...
Well, you've been using the tripod.
You've been using the tripod, so you should talk about it, yeah.
I just want to close out on the Marshall thing before we go on to that, because we were talking about Marshall. One of the things about seeing the resolution of something there, and Mike, you made a comment about it as well, is taking a look at resolution, being able to do focus.
Oh, yeah.
Display, and we talk about taking a look at the 5-inch or smaller display. It's a really a different thing than the Marshall 7-inch, as far as being able to follow focus. You said you found it invaluable in some of the stuff you've been doing recently.
I was literally pulling focus in London. What?
You've been on the 7s, right? The 7-inch.
Yeah. But I was on set with a 5D. Now I was on a good lens, it was a stills lens, like an L series, and I had a follow focus on it. But the actors were, you know, it was. Interesting piece of dialogue, and they were moving around and not necessarily staying on the same marks. And I was trying to ride focus as they sort of got up from their chairs and stepped back and stuff in fairly low light conditions. And I would just have been lost without a really good quality monitor. And I wouldn't have wanted a smaller one.
Yeah, no, I was reasoning that as this is a 6.5:1, which is close to the same size as what you have, but the resolution is 1024x768, and
it's
it looked
like
gorgeous.
It looked
absolutely gorgeous. So that might also do as well. Yeah. But again,
well, as you pointed out, he pointed out the false color and the focus assist buttons they have. And as you pointed out, though, you're not going to be able to push those buttons if anybody
if the director's standing right behind you. Yeah,
right.
Because I got to tell you, look, I understand the focus button.
Yeah, they're great
and it's
tools.
A good button.
But you're not going to be able to use it all the time. You have to be able to trust the actual monitor itself.
But also, you're watching the performance because,
right.
You know, the actor is going to lean forward or lean back. You need to be kind of... I mean, we're riding it, right? It's like keeping it loose. It's not like it's locked off. So you're actually operating while filming. So...
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good stuff and nice to see, again, that high-res monitor in person going, okay, now I get why it's a premium price. I can see where it would be valuable on set.
Who's the other people there that have that with the actual built-in scopes underneath it? Is that, what's that name?
Transvideo.
Transvideo.
The other one. Yeah, yeah.
They have like a row of scopes underneath. And, like,
yeah.
Great,
but let me talk about my tripod.
Yeah,
tripod, sorry.
Okay, so Satchler has a tripod that is a reasonable size tripod. This is not something that you would put on a backpack while you're going somewhere, but by the same token, it's not a full-on... like, you know, big tripod that you'd have on a film set. It's pretty much designed for either SLR and short, like P2, all that kind of stuff, but not, you know, like a RED.
I think they call it HDV on their webpage.
But, okay, so what it is imagine a normal tripod, and on many normal tripods, you would have a central mount that could go up and down a bit. So the legs splay, and there's a central column. In this case, the central column comes all the way out and turns into a monopod. So it itself has an extendable section in the middle extendable section and a floor mount for it. So you could, for example, put your foot on the floor bit and therefore brace your monopod and then be able to use it as like just a straight monopod. Or you could flick that, put it back inside the tripod, and then the spreader of the tripod actually turns into low legs. And it turns into low legs at two different heights, which I thought was just awesome.
Yeah, so like a hi-hat.
Hi-hat. So you basically get the hi-hat, the tripod. Now, if you extend
the
monopod...
That center column, though, we should say, it's like the size of a good pipe. I mean, it's like a good sink pipe, and it's the length of the tripod. A lot of them don't go quite... Yeah, a little bit thicker than that. A lot of tripods don't... The center column doesn't go the full length. This, like, goes the full length and has a center tube that comes out of that.
Yeah. Now, it is a 75 bowl, which is, you know, some people a bit small, but... I've got to tell you, we've been using it, and if you've got to take one tripod in a car, this gives you like 10 options. And also, you know, sometimes you like leave the car, you go over to a field, you're like just, or you're out, let's say you're upstairs three floors and you're filming and there's a bunch of stuff in the van. To be able to just have that kind of versatility when you didn't anticipate, just quickly swapping it out. Now, did anyone get a price on that? It's not particularly cheap.
$2,500, I want to say. I think it's
a good price for the professional gear that it is, but it's not like... Cheap and cheery.
It goes high. It goes what?
Oh, yeah, it was really high.
That
10
was...
foot, 12 foot? More
I was,
than that.
Yeah, I was going to say like...
It's a floor. I mean, if you take the model...
Because you got basically a monopod on this enormous...
And you can hold it on a pole. You could use it. It's so versatile. I was really impressed.
You can see not building a platform in a couple cases at the height that was up to.
Yeah,
that's
how
high it was.
Yeah,
that's...
you'd have to put a ladder to operate.
Yeah.
But it was like go-go gadget, wasn't it? It was like, and then you flick this out here, and then this becomes another thing.
These things we've been talking about in production gear, those are great examples of why the trade shows are great.
It's really hard to judge that on the web. You get to look at that thing in person.
We're not talking about the software we saw.
Well, let's talk about that then.
You know,
So one of the things that I found today, which I thought was really, really cool, I've been waiting for this to go public because I know a company that uses it for feature film work. It's a converter between 3D LUTs and ICC profiles. So it may not sound very sexy, but as soon as I explain it, you guys will all go, where do I get that? Let's say I'm doing some work with you, Jeff. You're doing a really nice composite, and one of you guys is on Nuke, one of you is on Flame. Somebody makes a 3D LUT, which is really good, obviously, for the monitor profiling, what we're going to be doing. Not change the underlying files, you understand, just as a monitor preview. And then I say, great, give me a thing and I'll Photoshop it and give it back to you. Well, of course, I'd love to load that 3D LUT in my Photoshop. I'm not going to be able to do it, am I? Because there are no 3D LUTs, Adobe, in Photoshop. But this will actually convert the 3D LUT to an ICC profile. I can then load the ICC profile into Photoshop, and I will actually get a viewing LUT that matches what you guys are seeing on Nuke and on Flame. And that's pretty awesome. I mean, it's small, but...
It's an awesome move that they're actually doing a package with it, because you've been able to buy, have them make custom LUTs, like you send them your LUT, and they'll do that for you. I think it's a really shrewd move. They probably built several of those over the year, and I think it's a really smart move to actually make that package that you can actually download.
It's Spaceman ICC is the product, I think, and I'll post a link in the forum.
That's very cool.
that's kind of glue stuff that you just want.
The other thing that was released on the net, but we couldn't find it here at IBC, is the Ninja recorder. Now, this looks good on paper, and we're going to have to follow this up over on Red Center, because it basically is meant to take the output of a 5D and record it to a solid-state drive. The trouble is, while we can get rid of the menus on the 5D with enough bloody button pushes on that output, it remains, as best I know, a 30 frame per second output. So it's not very relevant to us. So,
but they said 24, you said.
They said it records 24, but they didn't say they'd get 24 out of a 5D. So maybe it's just that it's designed to do 24. You know, and obviously if, I don't know, 1DS or Mark IV comes out that can record 24, but also have an uncompressed HD stream out the side of it without menus at 24, 30 and 25, then that would be really bloody useful. But quite frankly, I don't know, I would actually use it at 30. It's just not, I mean, it's what, 780 euros, I think it was, 780 euros.
I think the company was ATOMOS, Atomos.com. You know what, I don't remember if it's .com or whatever, just searching around.
We'll put it on the member, FXPHC member homepage. Check us out.
It's from a Hong Kong company, and there's somebody from Blackmagic involved, is what I've read on the forums somewhere, and I don't know. It's an interesting thing to look at. Curious. It records HTML.
Well, speaking of little things, it takes a while to find them here at the show, but Imagineer is actually here. They apparently signed up a bit late for the show, and over in Hall 13.
Oh, that's right. They told me. Yeah, I met those guys at the party last time. They told me
but
about it.
I think really fantastic news, which is actually they're going to actually create one central product as opposed to having all these disparate products. So what they're going to do is effectively take the best things, the Monet and Moki, take them in, throw out the stuff that doesn't work very well or is old and they haven't improved over the years, and just make one product. And Mike, I think you were relating a story, you know, frankly, that this, we wish they had done something like this years ago.
Yeah, because honestly, you can be really a bit clever by half with your naming. So like if you're in the product, obviously you know Moki and Monet, and then somebody else is like, so it's Monet, is it Moki, and do I need the...
I have to admit to confusion.
Which one is this again, and do I need this one? And then the other problem is it was, especially initially, kind of pricey.
Yeah, what was it, like $10,000, right, when it came out?
Yep.
Well, at least $10,000.
Well, that was the original tracker. Any software that was sold outside of a Flamer was $10,000 for a while. That was in those days, yeah.
Oh, they held that for longer than they should have.
Really?
And even now they're reducing the price again. So, I wish them good luck.
I swear by Monet. I mean, I know so many people just love that product. I mean, you know, we've done great classes on it.
Well, one could argue that every type of composite software could use a planar tracker built into it, frankly. I think that's they showed that what they do it really well in their recent release with the UI makeover, and now some technology makeover as well. I even like the idea of throwing out certain things and going, you know what? This just in production doesn't work. So, you know, I think I respect that quite a bit, actually, for them to do that. So
it's too easy to say, we'll just leave it in there and someone will have a use for it. But then you end up with kind of a bloated thing. And you want the reliability of going, when I hit this button, it's going to work. Not when I hit this button, oh, that's one of the ones we'd recommend that you mostly don't use. I hate that.
Yeah, so I think it's actually a really smart move on their part.
Do we know Do we know generally whether the show is at in terms of attendance? Like, is it? I mean,
I was talking to somebody at the meetup about that.
Yeah,
we couldn't decide. I mean, they said last year was really. I wasn't here last year, but they said it was off last year quite a bit.
Well, last year was global economic meltdown, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. As an attendee, it's a little hard to. It's like the rallies at the Washington Monument being 5 million people when they're 800,000. You know, I think as an individual, it's really hard to get a gauge for that. We'll have to see what they come out. But my standpoint is talking to every single manufacturer or talking to any company, they can definitely see a pickup. They have certainly seen a pickup in the last 3 to 6 months in business, which I think is a good thing for all of us in the business. It's a good sign that there's production and people making investments. And
my perception, I haven't noticed the difference on the floor from 2 years ago when I was here last. It feels the same. Feels
and Mike?
Similar. I would need to defer to you as I was not been here.
John is the expert at IBC.
I have been at IBC when it was in Brighton.
Wow.
But that was before I met you guys, so...
Yeah, we weren't even born yet.
Yeah, but it certainly seems healthy in my...
Like field, someone who met me at the meetup last night, and he said... He's a bit of a rat hole. He goes, so how do you find time to do everything you do? You guys get so much done. You got all these podcasts and classes, and they're phenomenal. They're just really incredible. I don't know how you get the time to do it, because I'm a young guy.
We'll see if they can watch us right now. They would know how we multitask.
We multitask. We drink.
Multitask.
We record.
Yes,
we're sitting
exactly.
In a pub and a, what do you call this? A
I think it's called a
cafe.
Well,
in Amsterdam.
Yeah. I was going to say not a brown cafe. Not a brown cafe. But.
We're sitting outside on a sidewalk.
Not a what?
Brown cafe, though.
You said like a... Oh, brown cafe. No, we're not that.
We're not one took over the line.
Yeah.
No.
We are sitting on a sidewalk cafe.
Is that what they're actually called, brown cafes?
Having a nice time. We've got a pile of wireless mics and recorders on the table. The people left, the right of us left because they looked at us like, I don't know what they're doing, but they've got a lot of wires.
They were like, are you here for IBC?
Yeah. What gave it away? Was it the wireless mics? Was it the tripods? Yeah. Was it the, yeah.
I am impressed with the traveling light these days.
Yeah.
It's a very nice production.
And I think we should do a shout out to this city, which obviously, John, you love, but I this is the first time I've been here. I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, really. It's really wonderfully culturally. Again, I like to say you hear a lot about the red light district and pot and drugs. And, you know, I mean, what, you know, that's an aspect of it, but it's, the city is really so much more. It's a beautiful city with a great heritage, great museums that hopefully we're going to check out tomorrow as well.
It's a comfortable city. So, I mean, I hate that. I hate the stereotype. It just is such a great...
I was going to say, I hate that it's comfortable.
No, I hate the stereotype. That that's exactly, the first thing you say when you say, I'm going to Amsterdam, they go, oh, yeah. It's like, no. Trust me, it's one of my favorite cities.
I would like to go in and get a Royale with cheese. That's my only regret so far. I haven't had a Royale with cheese. And I'd like mayonnaise with my fries.
We're getting a Phoebo. We're going to hit up a Phoebo later. It's the automatic.
Oh, Phoebo. Oh, this is the rat hole. This is the... But seriously, we're going to show you because it's like a bunch of little tiny mailboxes with glass windows on.
You know what an automatic is, right? Where you open up, put a quarter in and you get a...
Yeah.
Like a vending machine.
Yeah,
but it's like a wall of clear plastic mailbox, glass mailbox. You open it up and pull out a burger that's sitting there.
Oh, it's got food in it.
Yeah, so you can eat burgers and it's sitting there for like an hour.
There's some special food that's in there, isn't there? There's something they put in there, like herring. Oh, it's not herring. It's probably herring. There's a lot of herring here.
That's one of the things I thought was really funny as well. They had this stand that was selling hot dogs. And I walked up a bit closer and I realized they were selling actually two things. They were selling American-style hot dogs and Amsterdam-style herring dogs, which I think was...
And the fried ham booth at the convention center was nice.
Ham bun.
Ham buns, that's right.
Yes.
No, but
it's the little things.
The city's amazing. I love
it. And they do
place.
Have good beer, and you know how much that means to me.
It means a lot.
It's the little
in
things.
The end, so,
anyway. We found some good restaurants this year, too, which has been lovely. It's a great city.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to Amsterdam, please do.
I have to nick off and go back to England, to the mother country.
Shooting.
3 more days of fun shooting. I've had a great time doing that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm heading back Wednesday, going to spend a little more time here. It's actually nice after the show. If you want to come to the show after the crowds, it's not bad coming Monday and Tuesday.
Well, that's the thing everybody loves about IBC is it's a longer show than NAB. It's a little more relaxed tone at the floor. At NAB, you can't get to talk to people sometimes.
If you mean by not everybody, you mean... Or by everybody, you mean not the manufacturer. You have to exhibit for 5 days.
True. They're not happy.
But it was a very approachable show. It's a great place to be.
It's a little more, it's a longer show, so it's more up and down flow of traffic.
Well, anyway, thanks, guys. It's so great actually just hanging with you as well. I mean, that's on top of it. Enjoyed it. And thanks for taking the time to listen to this FX PhD, FX
Guide,
FX Podcast, Simulcast. Beer is tasty.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.